Chapter 2. The Bay of Flies. Lord Castellant Loras Grimm braced himself and swept his halberd out in a wide arc. The beastman's bray of challenge was cut short as the halberd bit into its hairy neck and tore its goatish head from its shoulders. Grimm spun the weapon, sluicing the blade clean of gore before planting it on the ground. His stern gaze passed over the surviving beastmen as they edged back from him. "Well," he said, his voice mild, "which of you wishes to die next?" One of the gores tossed its horned head and pawed the wet earth. It extended its notched and rust-bitten blade and spat something in the dark tongue. Maggots writhed in its eye sockets, and large, fat fleas danced in its hair. Though the rest of the brute's herd snarled and gibbered in response, none of them were eager to meet the same fate as their fellow. Grimm had little patience for such antics. He reached down to the warding lantern hanging from his belt and flipped it open. Gold light washed out over the closest beastmen, searing their unnatural flesh to the bone the instant it touched them. Bestial screams filled the air, and several of the creatures stumbled away, eyes boiling, hairy bodies alight. The few who were unaffected lunged for him as a group, snorting and stamping, desperate to douse his light. Grimm smiled in satisfaction. "Talon!" The griffhound gave a shriek of joy and sprang out from behind him, hurling himself at the foe. He was a heavy-bodied creature, with the limbs and loyalty of a hunting hound, and the head of a bird of prey. Talon knocked one of the beastmen to the ground and began to savage the brute with his beak. Grimm faced the others. It was no contest. A moment later, he jerked his halberd free of a twitching body and allowed himself to take stock of the current situation. The battle among the salt grasses had ended almost before it had begun. The beasts had been all but beaten before the first warblade had been drawn, which was only as it should be. Grimm had led his hallowed knights in pursuit of the war herd for weeks, driving them back across the plains of Vaux and down to the mosquito-haunted coasts of the Verdant Bay, burning their filthy camps and toppling their maggot-infested herdstones. It had been the largest herd of beasts in the region and the best organized in the wake of the closing of the Genesis Gate. Now, it was nothing more than a trail of dead stretching across the mud flats, tidal shallows and salt marshes of the embayment. The beasts had made their final stand in the reed banks among the high salt grasses and toppled stones of a long-vanished harbour. In better times, port cities had clustered like barnacles along the coastline, and ironwood galleys had plied the waters. Now, nothing occupied the coasts of the Verdant Bay save ruins and monsters. The Lord Castellant looked out over the turgid waters towards the distant Sargasso citadels that ringed the mouth of the bay like sores. The sea wind carried with it the monotonous thud of distant drums and the screams of the dying. The sky was thick with noxious clouds, which occasionally wept an acidic rain that could mar even the silvery finish of the Stormcast's armour. The clouds, like the beasts he'd just slain, had their origin in the citadels. And, like the beasts, the citadels and clouds would soon be cast down. He'd sworn as much during the siege of the living city. He closed his eyes, wishing that he stood once more amid the bulwarks of iron oak and thornwood. He could still recall the warm scent of the sunfire blossoms as they stirred in Alariel's wake, that final day at the 12-thorn gate. He could feel the deep, basso war chant of the Dwardin Root Kings resonating through him as they marched to war. Sylvaneth Dwardin and Hallowed Knight had fought as one, driving back the Rotbringers and casting down their fly-blown standards. Alariel had given full vent to her fury in that final hour, and the enemy had been throttled, torn and impaled from every side by thorny creepers and jagged boughs. She had been a sight to behold, and though he would never admit it to another soul, he felt honoured to have witnessed it. Afterwards, they had marched out to harry the foe and bring them to heel. He opened his eyes and cast a cool gaze over the battlefield. They had forced the beasts back into the reed beds and the shallows of the bay, even as he'd planned. The creatures had sought to flee across the three massive viaducts of boil-encrusted stone and fossilized sargassum which connected the distant citadels to the shore, but found their way barred by closed gatehouses and sealed portcullises. Their masters had deserted them, or perhaps they'd sacrificed their servants to buy the time they needed to ready themselves for the storm to come.
"They are wise in their wickedness," he murmured.
Talon chirped and leaned against his leg. He stroked the Griffhound's neck as he studied the three great gatehouses which loomed above the shallows. They were crude bastions of stone, balanced on pylons of bone and cankerous wood. The structures were functional, almost utilitarian compared to some he'd seen since arriving in the Jade Kingdoms. Monstrous, but more so in conception than appearance. Then, that was the nature of the enemy they faced. He nudged one of the dead beastmen over with the toe of his boot. Like the others, it wore a crude hauberk marked with a fly-shaped emblem. Bits and pieces of rusty armor culled from a dozen battlefields decorated its twisted frame. It was as if it had been trying to ape the appearance of something greater than itself.
"Like master, like beast," Grimm murmured.
The monsters who ruled these lands claimed membership in a knightly order and boasted of honor and glory. But their honor was built on the bones of the innocent, and their glory was a lie. It offended him, in a way few things did, though he could not say why. Some half-forgotten memory of who he had been, perhaps, rising up like the ache of an old wound. "My lord," Grimm turned. Aetius, one of the chamber's liberator primes, saluted briskly. Known to his warriors as the Shieldborn, Aetius was a stolid sort, a born fulcrum, able to anchor any battle line by dint of plain stubbornness. His silver warplate was scratched and begrimed, as was his shield. The warhammer in his hand was coated in gore.
"Idle musing, Aetius, nothing more," Grimm said.
He peered past Aetius, where a retinue of liberators saw to the merciful dispatch of wounded enemies. Beyond them, judicators took up positions along the shore to watch for any movement from the citadels, and a retinue of retributors set to breaking open the closest of the gatehouses. The monstrous structure shuddered like a wounded animal with every strike of their lightning hammers. The few guards who had manned the gatehouses were dead, picked off by judicators and prosecutors, or fled. Grimm looked at Aetius.
"Speak, Shieldborn. Tell me a tale."
"We have driven them into the sea, Lord Castellant. Some few chose to drown rather than face us." Aetius gestured to the body.
"I saw the same sigils in the reed city of Gramin before it sank. Have we truly found their redoubt, then?"
"One of them, certainly," Grimm said. "But after today, the Order of the Fly will have one less."
He spat as he said it, the taste of the enemy's name foul in his mouth.
Even that was a corruption of sorts, a twisted shadow of a once fine thing.
In the days of myth and legend, the Jade Kingdoms had been defended not just by the Sylvaneth, but by mortal armies as well. And the greatest warriors of these armies had been the knights of the chivalric orders, whose names were now all but forgotten. Lost to time and tide, as so many things were in this broken age. It was possible that the Order of the Fly had once been counted among those ancient brotherhoods, before its warriors had become twisted, pestilential mockeries that now sought to drown these lands in filth. And that was the saddest thought of all, that such men might have fallen, trading hope for despair and honor for cruelty. Perhaps that was why they offended him so. The true victory of chaos was not measured in battles won, but in the hearts and souls of their enemies. To twist and break all things out of shape. When they convinced the righteous that they were wicked and stole faith from the faithful, the dark gods rejoiced as never before. Whatever their origins, the Order had rapidly spread its miasma across Gairan, declaring pox crusades on the few remaining free peoples and conquering many lands in Nurgle's name. But now, at last, they were in retreat, their holdings smashed, many of their Blightmasters slain. Grimm's grip on his halberd tightened as he thought of battles past and the hard-fought victories that had led to this point. But more than that, he thought of the savageries the retreating Rotbringers had inflicted on the land and its peoples. Tribes, long in hiding, were rooted out and put to the sword or enslaved. Groves of slumbering Sylvaneth chopped and burnt to make siege weapons and hasty fortifications. They had left a scar across the face of the Jade Kingdoms, a black path leading from the gates of the living city to this very shore. The Sargasso citadels, with their immense balefire cauldrons, were the last of the enemy's holdings in this region, like a boil fit to burst. If he could break them here, the southern kingdoms might at last be freed of Nurgle's contagion. A shadow passed overhead, and he looked up to see a familiar armored shape swooping low. The Prosecutor Prime called down a friendly greeting to Aetius, who raised his hammer in reply.
"Tegras!" Grim called, signaling the winged warrior. "Gather Lord Relictor Morbus and the others, your fellow primes as well. There are matters to be discussed before we push forwards."
The Prosecutor Prime gave a lazy salute as he circled once overhead and then shot off to do as he had been ordered. Grim watched him go. Tegras of the Sainted Eye, hero of the Nahiliad Mountains, one of the first of their number to return to battle after being reforged. Like many of their brethren, he had perished in the Athelweard, but his death had been a merciful one at the hands of Alariel herself after he had suffered a horrific transformation brought about by their foes. Tegras reforged was not much change from the bold warrior Grim knew. A trifle slower in employing what he considered wit, and quicker to follow orders. It could almost be considered an improvement. Even so, it was a change, and Grim did not care for change. He glanced at his hand, and then away quickly. He had lost the original in battle with the Rotbringers, but the Sylvaneth known as the Lady of Vines had grown him a new one. The alien sensation of new-grown flesh and bone had faded over time, as had the green tinge, but even so, he sometimes found himself studying it for any irregularities.
"It is not going to sprout blossoms, you know, or in your case, thorns."
The voice was a rasping rumble, like the promise of thunder. Grim turned.
"And how do you know this, Morbus? Some spiritual insight forbidden to the rest of us?"
"Common sense," Morbus said.
The Lord Relictor resembled nothing so much as death made flesh. His mortis armor was streaked with muck, and the runic plates steamed with fading heat. Pale eyes fixed on Grim, and the Lord Relictor wondered if there was a smile beneath that grisly skull helm.
"If it was planning on it, it would have done so by now."
Grim made a fist.
"Possibly. Maybe it's biding its time."
Morbus gave a hollow chuckle.
"Perhaps."
His amusement faded as he studied the waters of the bay. He leaned against his reliquary staff, fingers tapping against the sigils of faith and death that marked the haft.
"We have come far."
"And farther yet to go." Grim looked at him. "What do the spirits say, brother?"
"They say much. Little of it any use to us."
Morbus sighed.
"The very ether is in upheaval, and all that is balances upon a knife edge."
He gestured, motes of crackling energy dancing upon his fingertips.
"Possibilities sprout like saplings, spreading and branching as never before."
"That is a good thing, surely."
Morbus looked at him.
"Only if we nurture the right ones."
He fell silent. Grim shook his head, annoyed. Morbus had always taken a certain pleasure in playing the cryptic seer. He cherished his portents of doom the way a Dwardin cherished gold. Grim released a breath he hadn't realized he'd been holding and turned to greet several newcomers. Tegras swooped overhead, accompanied by the Knight Venator, Enyo. Aetius's fellow Liberator Primes, Osric and Justinian, splashed heavily through the low waters, accompanied by the Judicator Prime, Solus, the Retributor Primes, Pheros and Marcius, and the Decimator Prime, Diocletian. Last came the Knight Heralder, Kurunta, his heavy Sigmarite broadsword balanced on one shoulder. The self-proclaimed Lion of the Hierarchites was singing loudly as he splashed through the reeds. A battle hymn, as usual. Grim greeted them with a nod. His command had shrunk and flourished with the seasons of this realm, as the war for the Jade Kingdoms dragged on. The dead vanished with a crackle, only to return, reforged and renewed, days or months later. Even so, a grinding attrition had set in, as the fortunes of war turned and the scope of things widened. By the time of the assault on the Genesis Gate, the Steel Souls numbered just a hardy few. But those few had been honed into a lethal blade, capable of piercing even the most resilient battle line. Now, in the aftermath of the All Points campaign and the Great Reforging, the Chamber was set to expand again. And most importantly of all, its long-absent Lord Celestant would once more take command. The thought of Gardas's return brought a brief smile to Grimm's face. It was a day that had been long in coming, and one he had anticipated greatly. Grimm was satisfied with the part he had played in recent events. He had built something here that could not be easily toppled, and the Steel Souls had become an engine of war second to none in the entirety of Gairan. But he was growing tired of the march, of the unceasing advance, and the burden of overall command. That was not his duty, not truly. He was the shield, not the sword, and his skills could be put to better use elsewhere. But for now, he would lead. He observed his auxiliary commanders for a moment, noting the condition of their armor, the faint signs of fatigue in some of them. Part of him considered waiting for reinforcements to arrive, but that would only serve to give the enemy time to strengthen their defenses. No, best to strike now, before they'd made ready.
"Who stands before me, clad in silver and blood?" he asked. "Only the faithful," Karunta said, his deep voice booming out.
A flock of saltwater stabber beaks hurtled skyward, startled. Several of the others chuckled until Grim's stern gaze silenced them.
"Only the faithful," Grim said. "Only the faithful could have come this far. But we have farther still to go before our journey's end."
He extended his halberd towards the distant Sargasso citadels.
"There. Those stones offend me, brothers. I would see them pulled down and something better erected in their place." "And how shall we get there?" Karunta asked.
Grim shook his head.
"You have eyes, surely. Look, see. The three great viaducts that stretch out over the bay. We shall smash the gatehouses asunder and use the enemy's own roads against them."
"The viaducts will be defended," Morbus said, "or worse, destroyed."
"No, I believe they will destroy all but one."
Grim used the ferrule of his halberd to draw an image in the dirt.
"Forcing us onto a path to their liking, which they will then defend to the utmost. So, we must choose our own path, and swiftly."
He glanced at the Knight Venator.
"That task shall fall to you, Enyo."
The Knight Venator nodded, her eyes alight with eagerness behind the false calm of her warhelm.
"You have but to name a target, brother, and I shall pierce it through."
Grim tapped the ground with his halberd.
"Take your sky host and destroy the two lateral crossings. If I have judged them right, they will attempt to guide us to one of the outer citadels, where they can contain us. We shall deny them that option, and force them to meet us on the central viaduct."
He looked at Aetius and the other primes.
"We shall push forwards down the center, crushing any opposition."
"And what of the slaves?"
Morbus rumbled. The Lord Relictor looked out over the bay, rather than at the map.
"I can feel the emanations of their despair from here. Thousands of mortal souls trapped on those false islands. Will we leave them to their fates?"
The beast herd they had just crushed had taken many captives during its rampages. As the Stormcasts harried the herd, they discovered that the captives were being sent to the Sargasso citadels, though they had yet to discover the reason why. Grim frowned. The thought of freeing the captives had occurred to him, but he had dismissed it. There was no time, and their numbers were too few. Perhaps when Gardas arrived with reinforcements, but not before. He cleared his throat.
We have no warriors to spare, brother. Not if we wish to achieve victory here at last.
And what good is victory if it is built on the bones of those we seek to win it for?
There was no judgment in Morbus's voice, no displeasure. Or at least, it was not evident. Grimm's frown became thunderous, and he felt a flush of guilt. The Lord Relictor was right, as ever. Morbus nodded slightly, as if aware of Grimm's thoughts. Grimm looked at Enyo.
Sister?
The Knight Venator thumped her chestplate with a fist.
We shall shatter their chains, brother, and the bones of their enslavers besides.
Good. See to the viaducts first, however, and go swiftly. Speed is our only ally here.
Grimm looked around.
Marcius, you will oversee the destruction of the gatehouses. Spread your warriors equally. Favor no single point. For the moment, I wish to keep our foes wandering. Solus, post judicator retinues along the shoreline. Harry any foe who tries to cross. They may attempt to break out when they realize what we're up to.
Grimm turned, studying the distant citadels. Black, noxious smoke spewed upwards from behind their high, sloped walls, filling the sky, blotting out the suns. There was sickness in that smoke, a sickness that had afflicted these lands for far too long, but which would now be cured.
Our Lord Celestant returns to us soon, brothers and sisters. I wish to present those citadels to him upon his arrival.
Grimm raised his halberd.
Who shall be triumphant? Only the faithful, the steel souls roared in reply.
They're at it again,
Gatrog said, his voice a liquid rumble. He leaned his armored bulk against the rampart of the fortress known as Third Circle, his thick fingers splayed out over the fossilized sargassum. His maggoty warplate creaked thinly as he shifted his weight, the blistered plates seeping sacred pus. Their sickly sweet perfume enveloped him, and he sighed.
That chanting is enough to drive a fellow mad. Lucky for us you're already mad, eh?
His shield-bearer, Agak, said, picking at his ever-increasing collection of boils and scabs. Gatrog glanced at the little rotbringer. Agak was a starveling, bloated-bellied and thin-limbed. He wore an oozing hauberk made from the hide of a toad dragon and a rusted sallet helm, as was his right as a chosen armsman of the most suppurating and blightsome order of the fly. He leaned against Gatrog's massive kite shield. Occasionally, he would hawk and spit on its rugose surface, helpfully adding to its luster with his nasal discharge.
What was that?
I said, we're lucky you're here with us, my lord.
Gatrog chuckled.
One of us is lucky anyway.
He patted the Rotbringer heavily on the head, nearly flattening him. Agak had served him faithfully, if not always wisely, since the day Gatrog had ascended to the dukedom of Festophane. Like the other armsmen who crouched on the ramparts of the Sargasso Citadel, Agak had been among the levy drawn from the heartlands of the blighted duchies and brought south to garrison these lands. An honest serf, bound to the king of all flies and the duchy of Festophane. Gatrog, too, had flourished in the damp shadow of the lord of all things. Like a mushroom, he had grown strong and wide with Nurgle's noisome blessings. He had quested for, and won, a taste of the sour syrup of the most holy fly-blown chalice, and knelt at the cloven feet of the Lady of Cankerwall to receive it. He had made the 7x77 oaths to the King of All Flies, and now rode for the glory and honour of Nurgle, as a true knight of the Realm Desolate. And now he would fight to defend that realm against the greatest of enemies. He turned. The ramparts of the Third Circle stretched away to either side of him, curling up and away from the thick sludge of the sea, like the petals of some putrid flower. Jagged turrets, decorated with the ragged banners of the Order, rose over the ramparts. The banners, crafted from filthy rags and diseased flesh, flapped loudly in the sea breeze. The citadel itself was shaped like a bubo, with high, thick walls composed of fossilized sargassum and the bones of the great sea beasts which had once hunted these waters. Within the walls, a crude, if enormous, web of gantries and clapboard bridges stretched in all directions, leading to a variety of internal portcullises and inner walkways. These walkways, as well as the courtyard below, were a hive of activity. Besides a few high-ranked Chaos Knights, like Gatrog, each citadel was garrisoned by a substantial force of Rotbringers. Many of these were mortal, though some were not. Most were ill-trained zealots, clad in tattered robes and bearing the mark of the fly on what scraps of armour they had been able to scavenge. They beat drums and rang bells with carnival exuberance as they went about their duties in disorderly mobs. Others, like Agak and the armsmen on the ramparts, were of a more professional disposition. Armed and armoured adequately, they were led into battle by putrid Blight Kings, obese, god-touched warriors, their bodies swollen with holy corruption. Unlike mortal warriors, the Blight Kings were slabs of unnatural fat and muscle, bound in straining skin and clad in rust-pitted warplate. Agak peeled away a scab and stuck the wet lump on the kite shield, adding it to the others.
"Will we sally out to meet them, my lord?" he asked.
Gatrog didn't answer for a moment, instead listening to the gentle drone of the rot-flies which swarmed about the rampart. He found the sound of insects soothing. Occasionally, he fancied he could even make out words amongst the droning. Onagal, the troubadour, sang that Nurgle spoke through the flies to any who had the wit to hear. Gatrog dearly wished to hear the voice of the king of all flies, even if just once.
"My lord,"
Agak pressed hesitantly. Gatrog shook himself and said,
"No, I suspect not, though I dearly wish it were otherwise."
He clenched his fists, enjoying the sensation of his boils splitting beneath the corroded metal of his gauntlets.
"Would that I might meet a worthy foe before this day is done. How else am I to show grandfather my merit, save in battle?"
He'd missed his chance to come to grips with the storm warriors at the Living City, and it galled him.
"Perhaps prayer?"
Agak suggested. Gatrog stared at him. The little Rotbringer looked away hurriedly.
"No, Agak,"
Gatrog said heavily.
"Not prayer."
Frustrated now, he thumped the rampart. It cracked beneath his fist, oozing pus. Third Circle, like the other Sargasso citadels, had not been constructed so much as grown. Its foundations had been dredged from the depths of the water by the magics of the Order's hireling witches centuries earlier. Day by day it had grown larger, spreading across the water like a fungus, until it had become connected to the other citadels by a latticework of hardened pus, sargassum and bone. Troops could move easily and swiftly from one circle to the other, as needed. And looking at the forces arrayed on shore, Gatrog suspected they'd be needed sooner rather than later. The Storm Warriors were fierce foes. They carried themselves as knights, though they fought on foot. Gatrog snorted in contempt. No true knight would lower himself so. Just as no true knight would vanish in a crackle of lightning when slain, rather than leaving his body to lie so that it might fertilize the soil. In death was new life spread. Such was the will of the king of all flies. But the Storm Warriors had their own king. Instinctively, Gatrog made the sign of the fly as he glanced skyward. Nothing good resided in that starlit void. That he was certain of. Whatever creed originated there, it was an unwholesome one, a thing of harsh purity, scoured free of all traces of life. Like the Storm Warriors themselves, lacking even honest bile in their veins. He spat over the side of the rampart.
"Would that I could slaughter them all, Agak."
Agak nodded obsequiously.
"Aye, my lord, would that you could."
"Are you saying I can't?"
"No, no,"
Agak said hurriedly.
"Merely that the moment is not yet upon us. Yes, yes, That's what I meant. Almost drop someone.
Gutrog nodded.
Yes, I assumed that was what you meant.
He ignored Agag's sigh of relief and turned his attention to the viaducts. Festering mantlets had been erected across the width of each of the viaducts, and rotbringers waited behind them, making a joyful noise with their drums and pipes. Like the beastmen, or the mortal guards of the shoreline gatehouses, they were a sacrifice on the altar of time. He frowned. He had not cared for the creatures, but to see them die so ingloriously pricked his sense of chivalry. Nonetheless, in dying, they had served the Order better than they ever had alive. That was the black truth of it. Clarity was Nurgle's gift to his servants. To see the world as it was, stripped bare of the tattered masks of yearning and expectation, leaving only a beautiful desolation. There was comfort in surrender and joy in acceptance. There was love there as well. A great serenity at the end of all things. And it was that bleak serenity that the Order of the Fly served. It was that serenity which they sought to impart to all equally, be they low-born or high. For were not all lives of equal worth in the eyes of Nurgle? Gorol had taught him that. He had served his cousin as a squire before the time came for him to earn his own spurs. Gorol had trained him, teaching him all there was to know about being a knight, about being worthy to serve the king of all flies.
Ah, cousin, what I would not give to fight beside you once more,
Gatrog murmured. But Gorol had perished in the depths of Writhing Weald with his entire muster, and the responsibilities of the duchy had passed to Gatrog.
Would that you were here to see this day and stand with me against such foes.
Would that all of our lost brothers were here this day, Gutrog,
a deep, hollow voice intoned.
Your brave cousin and Count Doloragus the Devoted, or even Braunis Acalgus, who held the Bridge of Scabs alongside Blightmaster Wolgus in the days before the storm's coming. We fight as much in their name as our own.
Agak fell to his hands and knees, bumping his head against the stones. The other armsmen did the same. Gutrog looked up into the leering, demon-shaped warhelm of his brother knight and commander and bowed shallowly.
Blightmaster Bubonicus, you honour me with your presence.
And you honour me with your service, Lord Duke of Festerfane.
Bubonicus was swollen with the raw stuff of Nurgle. He was almost twice Gutrog's height and easily three times his width, clad in thick warplate the colour of gangrenous flesh, and draped in a mouldering cloak and tabard of dull brown. He carried a monstrous halberd in one hand, its rusted blade surmounted with the chains of a deadly flail. The plates of his armour vibrated slightly, and Gatrog heard a faint buzzing from within it. Bubonicus had not been seen without his armour for centuries, and some whispered that the King of All Flies had bestowed the best of his blessings on one avowed to be one of, if not the greatest, of the Blightmasters. While Bubonicus was in overall command of the Sargasso Citadels, he had delegated the defensive preparations to three hand-picked champions, Gutrog among them. Gutrog didn't begrudge his newfound responsibilities. Bubonicus had other, worthier concerns. That he was even up here was a surprise. Gutrog felt a flicker of unease as Bubonicus raised his great tri-headed flail.
Do you see this flail, Gutrog?
Yes, my lord.
It was hard to miss it. The flail halberd was old, older even than the mortal realms, some claimed. The troubadours sang that it had floated through the void for millennia, only to become caught up in the birth of the realms like a bit of grit, and that even then it had thrummed with the feculent power of Nurgle.
It is called the Gatherer of Souls,
Bubonicus said.
Once, in another world, in a distant time, it was wielded by the greatest of grandfather's champions.
It still is, my lord,
Gatrog said quickly. Bubonicus chuckled.
How perspicacious of you, Gatrog. Yes, with it I have reaped a steady yield. But out there stands the greatest harvest of all.
He extended the flail out towards the distant gleaming of the enemy. The silvery shimmer hurt to look at, even from this distance, and their chanting beat at the air like the growl of some great beast.
Look at them, the enemies who have pressed us so fiercely, they who have cast down the banners of our allies. Where now valiant Torglug or the brothers Glot? We stand alone, perhaps the last defenders of the realm desolate.
But not for long, my lord,
Gatrog said, caught up in Bubonicus's stirring misery. The Blightmaster had a tendency to become worryingly grandiloquent at times like this.
What of the Gate of Weeds and our allies beyond?
It remains closed as yet, my friend, shuttered and barred against our rightful passage.
Bubonicus's massive shoulders sagged. The Gate of Weeds was an ancient realm gate located deep in the heart of the Sargassum from which Third Circle had been formed. Its luminescent surface had remained inviolate despite the best efforts of the Order's sages and seers, including the Lady of Cankerwall, Nurgle bless her name. Thus had begun the long, arduous task of making the land bend to Nurgle's will. Gatrog glanced at the titanic balefire cauldron that occupied the heart of the citadel. There was one like it in each citadel. Its massive circumference filled the courtyard, and many bridges and walkways crossed around it and over its smoking rim. For all intents and purposes, the citadel was but the hard outer shell for the cauldron. Flames roared deep within the stone plinth that supported the cauldron. The broken shapes of still-living Sylvaneth were fed into the fire, bit by screaming bit, through grotesquely shaped openings. Thick clouds of effluvium spewed upwards from the cauldron, filling the air with pox smoke. The smoke crept across land and sea alike, spreading Nurgle's influence wherever its poisonous rains fell. The cauldrons were kept bubbling day and night by gangs of slaves. When slaves fell, they were hacked free of their chains by an overseer and fed into the fire by their fellows. Nothing was to be wasted, and with every passing day, the land and waters grew sicker. A slow process, to be sure, but Nurgle was nothing if not patient.
The Gate of Weeds will open in time, Bubonicus continued, but that time is not now. This land, these waters, the people yet resist our blessed contagion.
He shook his head sadly, pus dripping from the antlers that rose from either side of his helmet. Gatrog cast a disdainful glare at the slaves below.
Brute savages, they know nothing of life, only persistence. Hope blinds them to the serenity of despair.
Bubonicus shook his head.
Nay, Gatrog, do not blame them for their ignorance. Hope is the weed in Nurgle's garden. It spreads swiftly, though we uproot it with every moment. Left unchecked, it would strangle grandfather's blossoms in their beds.
He raised a finger in admonishment.
Remember, hope is but the foundation stone of everlasting regret. And today's palace is tomorrow's ruin. Yes, my lord.
Gatrog spat a wad of phlegm over the edge of the rampart.
Even so, they irk me.
You must grasp the nettle, my friend, and find clarity in the pain. That is why we are here in these untamed lands. We will free these gentle folk from the tyranny of hope and teach them the peace of desolation.
Bubonicus gestured to the slaves.
Only when all know their place in the garden can true harmony be attained. Only when they learn what men such as this already know.
He clapped a heavy hand on Agak's shoulder, nearly driving the little Rotbringer to his knees.
Then, and only then, shall the soil of their souls be made fertile and welcoming for the attention of the Lord of all things.
Gutrog bowed his head, suddenly ashamed. Part of him had hoped never to return to the Verdant Bay after their pox crusade had ridden forth to bring battle to the living city. He was no armsman to spend his eternities watching over a fortress. Let others tend the garden. He'd thought himself the smile of grandfather's scythe.
I had almost forgotten, my lord. Our duty is a sacred one, and I am honored to be a part of it.
That is good, for you play a most vital part.
Bubonicus sounded amused.
Especially given what comes next.
He gestured loosely to the shoreline and the gathered silvery shapes arrayed there.
So it is to be battle, then?
Gutrog felt a thrill of anticipation. He had fought storm warriors before, but not for some time, and never in such numbers.
Eventually,
Bubonicus said.
For now, we shall shatter the central and leftmost viaducts. I have already given the order to your fellow knights. The honor of meeting and holding the enemy shall fall to Count Postulix and the garrison of the first circle.
Gutrog felt a flush of disappointment. He had hoped to meet the foe in open battle himself. As if reading his thoughts, Bubonicus chuckled wetly and said,
Fear not, Sir Knight, for I doubt that the enemy will spare us his attention. We cannot avoid battle, but we must delay it. With the Gate of Weeds open, these bastions will serve as Nurgle's new antechamber in Gairan. Through here shall 7 times 7 blighted legions pour forth and take back what the false goddess and her allies have stolen. Dark God, blight her roots,
Gutrog said fervently, making the sign of the fly. Alariel, the queen of weeds, who forced life itself to bow to her whims. She was no true goddess, for what sort of divinity would seek to set limits on the act of creation? Bubonicus nodded approvingly.
Even so.
He caught Gutrog by the shoulder and squeezed, causing the tarnished metal to creak.
With warriors like you, the order of the fly cannot fail. Hold fast to your oaths, Duke Gutrog. Third circle is in your hands.
He turned and clomped away, armsmen scattering from his path. He would be heading below, Gutrog knew, to oversee the continued unbinding of the Gate of Weeds.
So, no fighting,
Agak said after a moment. He sounded pleased. Annoyed, Gutrog waved him to silence. Agak was no coward, but he was lazy. Battle was too much like work for him. He turned to watch as a group of chosen slaves was herded across a high walkway towards the rim of the vast cauldron. They wailed and wept, and their despair was sweet to hear. Despair was Nurgle's gift to his children, and one they freely shared. To know such beautiful desolation was to be freed of the cruel burdens of life, to be released from a most insidious slavery. That was the Order's remit. They were not conquerors, but liberators, freeing the innocent from the chains of hope. Hope was a grievous lie, whispered into the skulls of men by treacherous spirits. Only when all hope was extinguished from the realms would mortal men be truly free. It was a heavy burden, but one all true knights bore willingly. Such was their oath to the King of all flies. One by one, the slaves were sent screaming into the noxious stew, and Gutrog chuckled. Such sounds they made, as if they had something to fear. He glanced at his shield-bearer. Agak always enjoyed watching slaves fall into the cauldron. But the little Rotbringer was frowning out at the bay.
What troubles you, Agak?
Why aren't they moving yet?
Gartrog grunted and turned his attention to the enemy. Agak was right. Going by all previous experience, the Storm Warriors should have been advancing by now, attempting to take the viaducts from the paltry forces stationed on them. The invaders did not normally hesitate when it came to seizing the initiative.
Perhaps they are frightened.
Agak looked at him. Gartrog frowned.
Perhaps not.
Somewhere high above, from one of the turrets, a horn sounded. Gartrog spun, hands slapping against the hilt of his blade. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the far right viaduct crack and splinter on its foundations. A thunderous groan filled the air as the immense bridge shuddered and its middle span abruptly collapsed into the steamy waters. He felt the reverberations of its fall through the stones beneath his feet. He caught sight of silvery winged shapes hurtling through the noxious clouds above and cursed virulently.
Of course.
He'd forgotten. Some of them could fly.
Well, there goes that plan,
he rumbled, unable to hide his growing excitement. Agak sighed and lifted Gutrog's shield.
Guess we're going to have to fight after all.